You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eagles fans, welcome to the second edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, and I am pleased to be joined this week by the illustrious Fran Duffy. Fran, how's everything going?
It's going wonderful, man. It's tourney time, March Madness.
It is March Madness, certainly. We will incorporate that theme into the show here. Now, we are without the third amigo, Beowulf. He is on vacation. I cannot confirm or deny the reports that he was at Wake Forest Pro Day on Monday, helping out Michael Campanaro boost his draft stock.
He may have been just rubbing his shoulders, just getting him ready to run the 40. We can't confirm, but sources say.
League source says. Nonetheless, he will be missed this week, but we still have an outstanding show for you today. Josh Norris from RotoWorld will be our phone guest. He does an outstanding job of analyzing the draft top to bottom. He does the mock drafts, but he also has a great top 100 list out, and he also does the painstaking task of doing the pro comparison, something that obviously is very difficult to do, but that's what fans want. It's like mock drafts. All the fans want to know, well, who is this guy like in the pros, so they can look at him and say, that's who he's like.
It is literally the most unfair thing you can do to a prospect is pigeonhole him into one thing. I mean, because if you say that Blake Bortles is like Andrew Luck, all of a sudden everyone's holding him to Andrew Luck. So it's a tough thing to do, but it's also incredibly unfair to that prospect.
Certainly.
It's
and
tough,
the same with mock drafts.
Exactly.
Same with mock drafts. But everyone does them. Everyone clicks on them. We're working right now on the mock draft tracker on PhiladelphiaEagles.com to have your one-stop shop to have all of the mock drafts that you want to follow up
who's
on.
Who's the hot pick right now?
Calvin Pryor.
It's still Calvin Pryor.
Yes, still Calvin Pryor. Bradley Roby, Ohio State cornerback. It's defense. It's still defense. But there really haven't been too many post-free agency ones yet. I know Mel Kiper still has Calvin Pryor as his. But with all the additions the Eagles have made on defense, I don't know if maybe offense might start popping up a little bit. But at the same time, the Eagles add Darren Sproles.
Right.
So I'm sure a lot of the draft analysts aren't expecting the Eagles to go in that direction either. So still a lot of defense, especially for where they're picking at number 22. So we're going to talk with Josh Norris a little bit later on in the show. We're going to talk defense today. Speaking of the defensive picks, we worked on the offense in the debut episode. Tried to go position by position. We didn't quite get to offensive line. We didn't get to tight end. We'll cover that. We got a few weeks before the draft here. Draft's not till May. We will get that all covered and squared away. We're going to focus on the defense today. And then we're going to look at the draft buzz, the latest headlines. Pro days are in full swing. And then our last segment is our fan-generated social media segment, The Pick is In. The question this week, using the hashtag EaglesDraft, is which defensive player, sticking with the defensive theme, which defensive player a couple years down the road will be considered the best overall prospect? We're not looking just for the Eagles. We're talking who will be the number one defensive player out of this draft, and maybe he'll be there at number 22. Maybe the Eagles will make a move up to get said player. So we went out to get your take, and we'll react to that in a little bit. But first and foremost, we're going to start here with the Eagles defense, and we'll start up front. You got to start up front. Along the line of scrimmage, the defensive line, young, hungry, developing, did a great job in the first year of Bill Davis's defense, transitioning from the 4-3 to the 3-4. You've got Fletcher Cox at the one end spot. You got Cedric Thornton at the other end spot, re-signed to a one-year deal, a restricted free agent, or an exclusive rights free agent, I should say, to be technically correct. He was re-signed to a one-year contract. And in the middle, you have last year's third-round pick, Benny Logan, who, when he was selected, I was thinking he was going to be more of the end spot, but he ended up being the star at nose tackle because we talked a little bit on last week's show, Fran, how he kind of symbolizes the transition that teams are looking at going from the big, the hulking, the massive nose tackles to more of the quick, athletic, penetrating types. What was your take on Logan watching him as a rookie, and what do you think his ceiling is?
Well, when you talk about that trend that's going on around the NFL, really what it stems from is the importance of third down. So it doesn't matter what you're doing on first down, what you're doing on second down. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, but you have those first two downs. But really it comes down to what can you do on third down? Can you get after the passer in third and long? And Benny Logan brings that. He's obviously, before he was named a starter, before Isaac Sopoaga was dealt to New England, he came in as a sub-package rusher, and he was able to get multiple sacks in the games leading up to the trade deadline, and they wanted to see more. So obviously Logan came in. He played very well. And I thought that the staff did a really good job of kind of mixing up the schemes up front. It wasn't just a two-gap defense. There were some one-gap principles that allowed him to just shoot the gap and get into the backfield. And really, he was able to thrive. So I think the arrow is definitely pointing up on all those guys up front, and especially, like we said, Benny Logan.
Can't wait to see these guys in the second year of the defense. And you made a great point there, Fran, from the standpoint that Bill Davis and the coaching staff did a great job realizing that these guys like Fletcher Cox, who thrived as a one-gap 4-3 penetrator, look, he needs some time to transition. He needs some time to adjust to a new scheme. Why don't you mix and match a little bit and play to your player's strength? So I think the coaches did a really, really good job at that last year. And one guy they also implemented well late in the season, especially from a pass rush standpoint, was Vinny Curry. So he's your guy off the bench mixing in on those third down situations. After that, though, you have Damian Square, who was a rookie free agent. They lost Clifton Gethers, the one free agent loss for the Eagles thus far, signing with the Washington Redskins. So you wonder from a depth standpoint what they'll look to add, whether it's in the remaining weeks of free agency or in the draft itself. Fran, when you look at what the Eagles did on defense last year, who are some guys that intrigue you when you look at possibilities of guys who could fit in this Eagles defense?
Well, really, it comes down to length. And we all know the saying by this point over the last year, Chip Kelly, big people beat up little people. And, really it comes down to length on the defensive line and being able to get off blocks. And when you look at that position really in this draft, there's a couple guys that stand out. One guy is Taylor Hart, one of Chip's former pupils and played for Jerry Azenara at Oregon, 6'6", 281 pounds. Unfortunately, was unable to work out at the combine and also couldn't practice at the Senior Bowl due to an injury. But really just a fantastic player to watch. Strong hands, mobile kid, good hand placement, plays with excellent technique, great leverage player, high motor kid, gives relentless effort to the football. Is very, like I said, he's a very fluid and surprisingly athletic kid. Drops in coverage at times, which is rare at 6'6", 281 pounds. So, really he's a guy who I'd keep an eye on. Maybe the injury can knock him down a couple of rounds.
Injury is he coming off of?
I believe he may have broken a bone in his foot during workout. So, again, that'll be something that you're going to keep an eye on. But another guy is a guy who we talked about last week with Tony Pauline. And it was a guy that really, when we were preparing for the Senior Bowl, stood out to both Bo Wolf and I, if Bo is listening to this from Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
You better
be. Brent Urban, and that's the kid from Virginia, played defensive tackle in their 4-3 under scheme. And the game that really stood out to me was against Oregon this year. Again, when he played the Ducks in the fall, really stood out. A really big kid who moves pretty well. He's 6'7", 295, good instincts, is able to find the ball quickly once he gets in the backfield, flashes the ability to stack and two-gap and shed an offensive lineman. Another guy who's fighting off an injury, so that could knock him down some boards. So I think that's two kids that you can look at on the defensive line who possibly could fit as a 3-4 defensive end. And you don't want to just pigeonhole it to 5 technique, because the Eagles actually played a lot of 4 technique on the defensive line with Fletcher Cox and Sed Thornton, which means you're playing head up on the offensive tackle as opposed to his outside shoulder. So, like I said, those two guys could be guys who could fit into a 3-4 scheme.
Not early round picks, though. We're not talking first round, second round. We're talking a little bit later on.
Yeah, I think those two guys are probably not people you're going to see go in the second round range. Maybe the third round, but I would be very surprised if one of those guys came off the board in round one. If you're talking round one, I mean, Rashid Hageman from Minnesota is a guy everyone talks about.
Very interesting backstory.
Absolutely.
The blindside type story, adopted family, fathered a child while in college. There are questions about his maturity, his hustle, but the size you talked about, big people, big little people, the size is there, the athleticism is there. The question is, can he package it all together at the next level?
Yeah, and there's some other guys, too, that are at the top of this draft that may not necessarily be what you're looking for from a size standpoint for the Eagles. And, Will Sutton, who's 6 foot, just about 300 pounds. Aaron Donald, 6 foot, came in the combine at 285 pounds. Great senior tape. Went to the Senior Bowl and just blew up the Senior Bowl. Went to the combine and tore up the combine. Was in the top 5 of all the defensive line drills. So Donald is a guy who, ideally is probably not a 3-4 guy. But like I said, it all goes back to what you can do on third down. So, if he's there at 22, who's to say that he's not an Eagles pick? So Donald would be another name I would watch.
Let's transition to the second level, the linebacker position, and more specifically the outside linebacker position. The Eagles did add Brian Braman, former Houston Texans, special teams dynamo, into the mix to go along with a group that's, you know, look at very top heavy. Trent Cole, strong second half of 2013, 8 sacks. Connor Barwin, the jack of all trades for the Eagles defense. Great free agent addition last year. Perfect fit in Bill Davis's defense. Outstanding job, not just from a rush standpoint, but from coverage as well. Total linebacker, complete package. And you have Brandon Graham, who, like Trent Cole, transitioned into the 3-4 defense. Who are some guys, as the Eagles probably need to add a little depth there, that you might look to add into the mix there? Guys who maybe either, if you're looking from a pass rush standpoint, or maybe even a guy that you just want to set the edge, something that Trent Cole does very, very well. Who are some guys who can do those things?
Well, before we get into that even, I mean, it'd be remiss to say Connor Barwin last year. We're in the middle of free agency, and it was around this time last year when the Eagles brought in Connor Barwin. Was there anybody, you know, with respect to Jason Kelce and D'Amico Ryan, Sed Thornton was incredibly consistent. Was there anybody that was more consistent than Connor Barwin was last year?
Probably not.
Yeah,
no.
He's just a fantastic addition, the ability to play in coverage and rush the passer and set the edge. One of the best guys I've seen on tape all year on any team at setting the edge and funneling the runners inside. But if you're talking about guys in this draft, there's a good amount of pass rushers that could possibly fit and some versatile players. I mean, Marcus Smith, the kid from Louisville, was a guy who played a number of positions for the Cardinals, lined up as a three-point defensive end, as a two-point rush linebacker, a stacked linebacker inside, a three technique in some sub-packages. Good motor, high motor kid, high energy kid, knows how to use his hands. Smith's an intriguing kid.
So inside linebacker, they've got D'Amico Ryans, Michael Kendricks. A guy I'm interested to see brought back into the mix, Jason Phillips, was signed to be a special teams dynamo. Last free agency, one of the first free agent signings for the Eagles, in fact, tore his ACL in training camp, never was able to make an impact. There's been so much emphasis on improving special teams this offseason. I can't wait to see him get back on the field. As we go to the defensive backfield, you look at cornerback, they added Nolan Carroll. That gives you another player with quality starting experience in this defense. You have Brandon Boykin, who's your slot cornerback, 6 interceptions. Can't say enough great things about the timeliness of his picks a year ago, especially the ones that won the games against Washington and the NFC East Championship game against the Dallas Cowboys. You have Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams, who were also added in free agency last year. Who are some of the cornerbacks, if the Eagles want to look for another young guy maybe to add to the mix, who have stood out to you throughout the process?
Well, the trend seems to be with the guys that the Eagles have brought in is size, right? So there's a lot of bigger corners in this draft that, you know, from the top of the draft down to the later rounds. Then we'll talk about some of my the sleepers later in the podcast. But if you're looking at the top of the draft, you mentioned one of the favorites in the mock drafts around the league is Bradley Roby out of Ohio State. 5'11", 194, ran a 4.39 at the combine, had a great junior, you know, a great sophomore year and a so-so junior year. So people think he may be able to slide down to 22 and maybe even further. So he'll be an interesting one to watch. Darquez Dennard from Michigan State, widely regarded as the best press corner in this draft, played, you know, mostly zone and press man, can flip his hips and run with receivers, is more of a straight line guy than a space guy, but in the Eagles scheme could, you know, be able to make an impact. And if you move further down the board, Stanley Jean-Baptiste from Nebraska, 6'2", 218. People are going to make the comparison to Richard Sherman because of the size and the former position at wide receiver. Both of them played receiver in college. Lavelle Westbrooks from Georgia Southern's 5'11", 186. Jalen Watkins is a guy who – there's three Florida corners in this draft, and Watkins may be the least talented but is my favorite of the group. You know, 5'11", 194, played some safety for them this year and also saw reps as a corner, played inside, played every single spot in the secondary. Was incredibly impressive at the Senior Bowl and then repeated that performance at the Combine. Had the best bench press of any of the corners, ran a top 5.40 at 4.41, has good hands, good range as a safety, physical kid, great in press coverage. So that's another guy who, you know, could possibly fit if you're looking for those big corners. Philip Gaines, 6 foot, 193, was at the Shrine game and played pretty well there. This is a kid out of Rice. He ran a 4.38 at the Combine, surprisingly fluid for his size. So he'd be another guy I'd keep an eye on as well.
Fran, as we go to the safety position, I think we'll save a little bit of the safety discussion for our good friend Josh Norris, who's going to be the guest on today's show. But the Eagles did sign Malcolm Jenkins, and everyone has lauded his versatility, the fact that he was a corner coming out of Ohio State, that he's played the slot corner in the NFL, an area where the Eagles, I think, wanted to addressed, not just from the safety standpoint, but the overall versatility. Because if Brandon Boykin were to suffer an injury, who would be your backup slot cornerback? Who are some guys in this draft who have that potential versatility, who have done both, where they've lined up at safety and lined up at corner?
Well, I think, and one of the reasons we talk about that with the Eagles is that they, and this, they're not the only team to do this. There are lots of other teams that do this around the league, but they employ their safeties and their corners in a way where it's a left safety and a right safety. And that's pretty much how it is, from, game in, game out. And so when you line up that way, you need your players to be able to do everything that you ask of them. So you need a guy to be able to rotate down into the box and play as a box player close to the line of scrimmage. You need a guy to play in the deep third or in the deep half in zone coverage. And you need a guy to play in the slot or play against a tight end and man. So you need these guys to be able to do such a wide variety of things that, that's what requires such a versatile skill set. And that's why I think Malcolm Jenkins was the guy that, really they targeted from day one, because he has shown already that he can do that. So who are some guys that can possibly do that? I mean, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix from Alabama, obviously, is one of the guys who you can really say right now can do all of these different things, can play in space, can play in man coverage, has good instincts in zone and knows how to come and run the alley and make a tackle down in the flat. Jonathan Dowling is a guy who I think is pretty interesting. He's 6'2", 190 out of Western Kentucky. He's a Florida transfer, junior who declared early for the draft. Played both safety spots at Western Kentucky. Long kid. Really kind of reminds you of a skinnier Eric Reed, coming out of Western Kentucky. He's an above-average tackler, a decent tackler, but he's a big hitter, recognizes routes. I think he's got good route recognition in the back end, good instincts, fluid hips. Ran pretty well at the combine, ran a 4.52. A very interesting center field type player who's really good in space and, like I said, has the ability to come down and lay a hit on you.
Now, Fran, you've done an outstanding job producing the Scouts Notebook series here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. The latest edition, the outside linebacker, the pass rush edition, now available not just online but on the mobile app as well. What were you looking to accomplish as you've gone through these pieces, as you've looked position by position at what the experts and the analysts try to do when looking at the prospects and trying to break them down?
Well, really, this was an idea that I kind of came up with last draft cycle, where it was getting close to the draft. It was right around the draft time, and I said, you know what? I wish there was a segment out there where you could see all these guys, what these guys look for, what the experts look for at each of these positions, and it would be cool for fans to kind of have some kind of base of knowledge to say, okay, this is what Mike Mayock and what Phil Savage and what Josh Norris and Daniel Jeremiah, what Greg Cosell, this is what these guys look for when they look at each of these positions. And, so kind of got the ball rolling in the middle of last fall and, went down to the Shrine Game, went to the Combine and went to the Senior Bowl and talked to all these guys and was able to sit down with them for all about a half hour. So it was great to be able to kind of pick their brain about all these different positions and what they look for. And it's a shame there was a lot that we couldn't get into these pieces, and I think we're going to start integrating that into this podcast.
Certainly, and the first thing that we're going to do now here from the Scouts Notebook series, the director's cut, so to speak, from the safety position, what do the evaluators look for, and why is it a tough position to evaluate? We're going to hear from NFL Films' Greg Cosell, Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, and Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network.
Projecting college safeties into the NFL can be difficult because it's such a complete position at the next level. You not only have to be a run defender, you not only have to play disciplined football in center field, but you have to be able to do a variety of things. Play over the slot receiver, show good ball skills, show good instincts, good timing, good anticipation. You have to be quick, not only up the field, but laterally and sometimes in reverse. It's just a variety and an all-encompassing position nowadays in the NFL. There are no more traditional free safeties and strong safeties. It's basically one position that defends the run, covers the pass, and is even asked to blitz the quarterback on occasion.
One of the toughest positions I find to evaluate is safety. Because safety is a position that for years we heard you could find safeties anywhere. But with the changing NFL game, safeties are becoming increasingly important. All you have to do is look at the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks, with a defense arguably driven by their two safeties, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, one a first-round pick and one a later-round pick. So very often when I'm looking at safeties, it's very difficult to get a feel for their overall game watching them in college. And the reason for that is very often they're not asked in college to play an overall game. You can watch an entire game with a safety and he may be involved in 10 plays because he's a 2D player or a single high player, and he's not involved in a lot of action. So there's a lot you have to try to extrapolate to evaluate the safety position. So at times, just from film now, it can be a difficult position to evaluate.
For me, the hardest position to evaluate when you're going from college to the NFL is a safety position. Just because you can go through three or four games worth of tape and you don't really see guys get near the football because so many bubble screens, so many quick hitters in the college passing game right now, it's tough to get a true evaluation. You can see a guy fill the alley, you can see him break down tackle in space, but in terms of watching him play the ball, range off the hash and different things, you just don't get any opportunity to do that. You have to do a lot of work. It's talking about 7-8 games before you can really get comfortable with the safety.
Our guest this week on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA is none other than Josh Norris, the outstanding draft analyst for RotoWorld. Josh, how's everything with you in Draftland?
Things are good. You know, this is creeping up on me, but I always feel like I'm in a constant state of catching up, but everything's good here.
Josh is an outstanding analyst, not only on RotoWorld, but on Twitter as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Norris. Now, Josh, we just played a segment from our Scouts Notebook series, which explains why it's so difficult to evaluate the safety position. Josh, as you're looking at the candidates in this year's draft class, what are the things that you look for, and why is it that teams have a tough time trying to exactly pencil in where they can plug these safeties at?
It's a great question. I think you can say this with a lot of these types of positions. I think the NFL knows, and their evaluators know a lot more than we do about responsibilities and assignments, in that they can ask the coaches. They have much more information than we do about the defensive assignments. But from someone on the outside, one of the biggest things is that you can watch six tapes of a safety and only have about one full game's worth of times that they are in on the action, or they're in on a play. But then you also have to understand, try to guess what their assignments are, what their responsibilities were. There are plenty of times, and you've seen this, I'm sure, when a corner gets beat on a vertical route, and then the first thing he does is throw up his hands and turn to the safety and ask where the help was. Now, you're not exactly sure if the corner just screwed up his assignment, the safety screwed up his, so on and so forth. I do think that, as we're going to see, and we've heard a lot throughout this draft process and this free agency process, is everyone wants to mimic what the Seattle Seahawks have done with a strong safety and a free safety, when in the past there have been some interchangeable pieces. Now, no matter how much a safety is in the box or a strong safety, how much he is, he's going to have to cover at some point, even in the deep half, to mix up the coverage techniques. And two, you're not going to have an Earl Thomas in every team. I think there's an argument that can be made that Earl Thomas should have been the second prospect selected in his draft if you were going to redo it from a couple of years ago. So a big portion of that is how much range does a safety have, if he's going to be one of those deeper half guys. But then you've also seen it in recent years, Kenny Vaccaro going up and matching up with these joker tight ends, going up against slot receivers as well, being able to have that versatility so you can stick with certain defensive personnel against tempo and offense. And that's a long answer, and that covered a whole bunch of bases. But there aren't as many wide variety of prospects in this class as we've seen probably even in last year's class, in my opinion.
Now, Josh, you have a top 100 of the prospects in this year's class on RotoWorld, and number 9 overall is your top safety, Haseen Ha-Ha Clinton Dix of Alabama. Why do you have him rated as the top safety in this year's class?
To me, I just love his range. I love his versatility even, and he would probably most likely play that free safety spot, the rangy type that can cover plenty of ground. When you are able to see replays, or even once in a while get the coach's copy of tapes, that you sit back in the end zone stance and you can just see him move, he's very good at recognizing the quarterback's eyes, where that intent is going in terms of passing, as well as recognizing where the receivers, and recognizing stems, recognizing alignments, and guessing on the routes because of that. He's someone that's always moving around, always fluid. And to me, he's a plug-and-play safety prospect. I wouldn't be shocked if he's the number 10 overall pick of the Detroit Lions. I'm not sure if any of the people are saying this as well, but it would not floor me if he's going to be the number 6 pick with the Atlanta Falcons. I know that's really early, but we were all surprised about Mark Barron going, number 7 a couple years ago. I actually think Clinton Dix is probably a better prospect. I know this is probably a better draft class if you just look at it in a vacuum. But with how much emphasis teams are placing on the safety position, how much money those safety players got in the free agency, wouldn't be surprised if a team is targeting one in the top 10, like I said, at number 10 or possibly even number 6 for the Atlanta Falcons.
Josh, what's really interesting about the HaHa Clinton Dix ranking, too, is that you have such a disparity between he and Calvin Pryor, who you have 37th in your top 100. Can you just talk about really two guys who the consensus sees is very close together, and you've got them pretty far apart, 9 and 37?
Yeah, you know, once again, I think Calvin Pryor was kind of set up to fail at Louisville a bit. Now, I think there's two sides of the coin here. One, they lined him so far off the line of scrimmage that he was able to show off some of his range and, in turn, make plenty of big hits at the catch point because he was so far away at the football that instead of being closer to his receiver, to the offensive player and acting like he was covered, a lot of quarterbacks thought receivers were open, so he had a lot of contact at the catch point, which showed off his big hitting ability, so on and so forth. But two, to me, he was late on a bunch of those patterns. And I can't sit here and say that if he did play a different position, maybe even a strong safety spot, because he played a lot of free, in my opinion, farther away from the line of scrimmage, that I think he'd be better closer to the line of scrimmage, because I think that fits his game. He's more of a physical target. But I do think there's that interchangeable piece where he can, kind of like a Jonathan Cyprian last year, can play close to the line of scrimmage if you need him to be, but then there can be movement prior to the snap, switch him with the free safety, and let him play closer to the deep half. I saw some missed tackles as well that I didn't see as much with HaHa Clinton Dix. I do think that is a skill and a trait that has been compensated for in the NFL. We saw it with Kenny Vaccaro last year. He missed a lot of open field tackles, in my opinion, at Texas, and it wasn't an issue last year. But where it ranks now, like you said, Calvin Pryor in the late 30s, and I actually have Jimmy Ward from Northern Illinois in the early 30s, and he's my second safety prospect right now.
Good transition there, because you mentioned Kenny Vaccaro, and one of the painstaking things that you do in this top 100 for most of the guys is you have an NFL comparison, and for Jimmy Ward of Northern Illinois, you compare him. You actually say he's a poor man's Kenny Vaccaro. How tough is it when it's a smaller school like Northern Illinois trying to look at someone in that type of defense, going against that type of competition, and trying to make that projection all the way to the NFL level?
Well, one, comparisons are difficult no matter what, but we all know that everyone loves them because it tells you what a player's style is like, so you can kind of seamlessly transition them into the NFL. With Jimmy Ward, I saw someone at Northern Illinois that was used all over the field, probably more in free safety than as a strong safety, at Northern Illinois in some situations, in some games. I think he was asked to do a lot. But then you move on to the Senior Bowl. And at the Senior Bowl, a lot of these safeties were matched up as corners often. And I think that was a plan by the NFL because they wanted to see if they could match up with receivers, with tight ends, because a lot of teams now, instead of using a third cornerback in nickel situations, they're moving a safety in the box and or even as a third linebacker even in those situations. So Jimmy Ward, to me, was probably the best corner at the Senior Bowl, even though he is a safety prospect. So I think he can match up in man coverage, press situations, off coverage, so on and so forth. To me, Jimmy Ward would not be surprised at all if he's the pick for, like, let's say the Cincinnati Bengals, the Green Bay Packers, so on and so forth later on in the first round area.
One of the other guys I really wanted to ask you about, too, as we kind of change gears to pass rusher, you've got Dee Ford ranked ahead of Anthony Barr in your latest top 100, and I would say that's definitely against the consensus. Is that more of a reflection of Dee Ford, or do you think that's more of a reflection of Anthony Barr?
I think both, and I think we all entered the season with Anthony Barr as the perennial top senior prospect in this class. But I think a lot of that preseason evaluation had to do with projection, because Barr had, at that time, only spent one season on the defensive side of the football. So you always saw that he was an athletic specimen, that he had a great get-off and could gain that step advantage on the edge. So we projected, because there were flashes of it, hand use, length use, on counter moves once that initial momentum was stopped. This year I didn't see a step forward in that area at all. I think he did get bigger and stronger, but I didn't see that use of a counter move. So if I'm just being honest with myself, I was more impressed with Dee Ford, because he's someone that has great flexibility on the outside. I mean, his bend to turn the corner is outstanding. And I think he showed that during this season and obviously at the Senior Bowl when he just kept beating tackles repeatedly with that. And so, but if you just have that outside move, then you might not be able to stand up with a whole bunch of great tackles that there are in this league. So with me, I'd book for D Ford and his counter move, his hand use, his length use, his ability to work through blockers and on the inside. And someone that I love in next year's class is Cedric Ogbui from Texas A&M. I think he and Andrews Pete, I know this is way in advance, but are going to be the top tackle prospects in next year's class. Moving forward, I saw that in the game against Texas A&M and Auburn, that D Ford, sure, he beat him around the edge in the first couple times, but there were plenty of instances where he utilized a great punch, a great jolt to keep Ogbui on skates. And Ogbui is a very athletic tackle. So if you could take away that initial momentum, Ford was very, very willing and able to work through and on the inside, and he showed it again against Missouri. Now, I do question if Ford can consistently set the edge. I think he has trouble recognizing reach blocks, which might limit him to sub-package situations early on in the NFL. But a team that has a defensive end that they're willing to move inside in pass rushing situations and then bring in a sub-package edge rusher, I think D Ford can instantly fill that role in the NFL and be an impact player in those situations. Maybe play 20 to 30 snaps early on, maybe in the first 2 years, and then expand on his role from there.
That sounds like a good fit for the Philadelphia Eagles, to say the least, who probably would be looking for a pass rusher at some point in this year's draft. Now, Josh, in the spirit of March Madness, we wanted to have a little fun and have our own little Final Four, so to speak, and to try to correlate with the draft. We're going to have our sleepers. We're looking at the defensive positions, D-line, linebacker, corner, and safety. And Fran came up with his sleeper at each of those spots, and we wanted to get your sleeper at each of the spots, too. And Fran, I'll let you kick this off so Josh can have a moment to think about it. Defensive line, who would be your sleeper in this year's draft class?
Well, that's a tough one because there's a lot of really talented guys that could go on day three. I went a little deeper, and I took a guy that
– How deep are we going?
I didn't go too deep. But if you look at a guy at Oklahoma State who didn't get invited to the combine, was really regarded as by some as one of the top seniors available going into this past season – is Calvin Barnett from Oklahoma State, 6'2", 300 pounds, lined up as a defensive tackle on a 4-3, mostly as a 3 technique, but the kid's athletic, was always around the ball, had good pop in his hands, really knows how to use his hands well, had a good motor, high motor kid, plays with a ton of energy, and even dropped in coverage at times at 300 pounds. So he's a guy who could, you know, could kind of fall through the cracks a little bit and maybe stick somewhere. It'll be interesting to see. I was very surprised to see that he wasn't invited to the combine.
Josh, what about you? Who would be your sleeper along the defensive line?
Well, Fran, tell me if I'm cheating here because I'm not sure where this guy's going to go. Probably in the third round, but maybe in the fourth or fifth round area. But I'm going to go with Louisiana Tech defensive tackle Justin Ellis. This guy's massive, like 330, 340 pounds. So he's going to be pegged as a nose tackle. But to me, he's not a stuck-at-the-line-of-scrimmage defensive tackle that's a run-blocking type of prospect. You know, to me, he's an upfield. He's a disruptor, and he's got nimble feet for such a big guy. I think the role that he plays early on in his career is kind of what star Lotulelei played early on in this season, in that he was a 3 technique on the base sets and then moved into a 1 tech nose tackle situation, a role. I think Justin Ellis can be that 3 tech early on that can just overpower those guards and center combinations that he has to. But he's utilized a spin move, very nimble, very agile, like I said. So wouldn't be surprised if Ellis is a third-round pick. But if he's in the fourth to fifth-round area, he definitely fits this, in my opinion.
You know, Josh, you and I talk throughout the fall, and, you know, obviously preparing for the week at the Shrine game, I know you put out your piece looking for the top guys that are going to the game. And when you were preparing, watching film, watching a lot of these guys, Ellis was a guy that really stood out to you on tape. And then we went down to the Shrine game and then to the Senior Bowl. He was at both events, and he stood out at both of those places as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there's another guy there. I hate to throw out another name, but Kerry Wynn from Richmond is someone as more of an edge guy or possibly even as a 5 technique in an odd man front, who I think is could make a roster at least because he has a very high motor. He plays snap to whistle on every single play. And I actually saw him line up on the edge and inside. And friend, I know from a couple of years ago, you and I both loved Malik Jackson. I'm not saying that Kerry Wynn can be Malik Jackson, but possibly in that sub-package role, moving from the edge to the inside. And to me, interior disruption is king. If you can consistently generate that, you're going to completely change the way that your offense has success in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, when we – it's funny. We don't want to go on this long tangent, but – We were preparing for the Shrine Game.
Do I have to step in at the party at some point here?
You know, we were preparing for the Shrine Game, and, you know, Bo Wolf and myself were going through some of the profiles of some of these guys, and Bo joked, hey, you know, Kerry Wynn was third-team All-CAA last year.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, what do you expect from this guy? It's third-team All-CAA. But I'll tell you what, he really stood out at practices, especially I remember day two or day three of practice down there at St. Pete. He really stood out. Like you said, he's a high-energy kid. Big kid, 6'5", 266, ran well, explosive kid. I believe he finished with one of the best 10-yard splits of any of the defensive linemen at the Combine. Really just a fun kid to watch. And I like that name. That's a pretty good name. And I like the March Madness theme as well, because you have a Temple Owl, Elon and Drexel, all three of us are on the outside looking in. It's a shame. But
at least Temple has been there. Now, I went to school from 98 to 03, graduated 2003, and I have not had one invite, whether I was the time I was there to this day. So I'm just waiting for the day when the Drexel Dragons finally go dancing. So my day will come eventually.
I guess we can jump on linebackers. Is there a linebacker, Josh, that stood out to you as a guy who could potentially stick as a late-round pick?
Yeah, you know, I'm probably cheating here again, and I guess that's just
There's no cheating here. I don't know how it would be cheating, so.
Well, see, because this guy could be a third-round pick, and I guess that goes against the rules here, but I'm going to go with Iowa's Christian Kirksey. This guy was just stuck out to me when preparing for the Senior Bowl. He was actually landed in my top 20 Senior Bowl prospects heading into the week. He's someone, sure, I think James Morris probably got most of the attention heading into the year, the middle linebacker. But Kirksey is someone who isn't the best athlete, but to me he's very fundamentally sound and very completes his responsibilities play in and play out. He's someone that lined up on the slot receivers, dropped in coverage plenty of times, stuck with tight ends in those situations. I think you can play him at will linebacker. I think you can play him at strong side linebacker at the line of scrimmage in certain situations. He's not much of a blitzer, in my opinion, but he can match up and get physical with receivers, and that's a trait and a role and a where he wins, quote-unquote, that I think the NFL really is searching for right now in linebacker prospects.
I love that name, Josh. I smiled when you mentioned it. Chris gave me a look, but, Kirksey was a guy, when I watched him too, I agree, you know, really stands out, a very natural player in space, really lined up over the slot more often than not, you know, it was in space more than any linebacker really than I've watched. And I remember I caught some heat for saying this in the fall, that all three of those backers from Iowa, and all three ended up going to the Combine, James Morris, Kirksey, and then Anthony Hitchens as well, really stood out to me over, you know, some of the other acclaimed linebackers in the Big Ten. But Kirksey was a guy who really stood out to me. I'm going to go with a similar type player, and that's Bo Lacumbo from Oregon.
I was going to mention him if I didn't pick Kirksey, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah, he's a similar guy. I mean, 6'2", 225, again, often lined up in the slot, at times inside as a stacked linebacker, very fluid athlete and natural in his drop, great ball skills, good speed for the linebacker position, around a 4.66. Holds up surprisingly well at the point of attack for a guy who's 225. But Lacumbo and Kirksey, very similar players. I like both those kids.
Josh, transitioning to the defensive backfield, who would be your sleeper in the secondary from the cornerback position?
Corner. I'm probably going to stick with this Oregon theme and go with Terrence Mitchell. I think Ifo, I'm not even going to pronounce his last name, drew a lot of attention prior to the declaration period. But to me, Terrence Mitchell is a very good prospect on the other side. And Ifo was targeted a lot, and that shows me that Terrence Mitchell was doing his job on the opposite side. Sure, there were plenty of instances, not plenty, I should say, but there were some instances where he was beaten vertically along the sideline. I think he can clean that up. But he's physical. He can line up in press. He can line up in off. He can line up in zone, man, so on and so forth. If you get him in that early third day period, fourth and fifth round, I think Terrence Mitchell can maybe not contribute immediately early on, but he can contribute throughout his rookie contract at least.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a guy out of Liberty that we saw down at the Senior Bowl, Josh, and that's Walt Akins. I couldn't believe the guy didn't get a combine invite. 6 foot, 203, was the boundary corner for Liberty this year, a long physical kid, reroutes receivers really well, a very physical tackler in the run game, a big hitter. you know, really attacks blocks on the perimeter and understands leverage, knows how to set the edge in the run game, which is obviously a big thing for the cornerback position. You know, really just a surprisingly fluid kid who I know he had a pretty good day at his pro day last week, but really was a guy I was very surprised didn't get a combine invite.
All right, last but not least, the safety position. Fran, I'll give you first dibs on who will you take for your sleeper at the safety position.
All right, well, this is a guy who some people see as a corner. Some may actually see him as a safety. He played a little bit of both down at Virginia Tech, but that's Antone Exum. Missed a good portion of this year due to a knee injury and then an ankle injury when he came back. But, you know, 5'11 and a half, 213 pounds, coming off the injury around a 4.59. He's really just a really impressive kid, reliable tackler, very physical in press coverage. I think he's better press corner than he is an off, but, you know, really just one of those guys who I think that regardless of whether he's a safety or a corner, like we talked about with Jimmy Ward, is a guy who you can move around and have him cover, you know, those bigger slot receivers or a tight end possibly in space. Just a really impressive kid, and obviously the injury really hurt his stock, so I think he'll be available maybe on the third day of the draft. And honestly, wouldn't shock me if someone took him in the third round, but with the way that this draft is panning out, it doesn't look like that'll be the case.
I'm going to go in a different guy, and I'm sticking with the Oregon theme, and it's Avery Patterson. He's also someone that played some corners, some safety in his time. The one thing that sticks out that he can't do is tackle, which is really bad for a defensive back, especially the last line of defense. So if he can shore that part of his game up, to me, he's a very aggressive player. He's in the right position to make plays. He just doesn't finish them enough, but I saw him play deep half. I saw him play up close to the line of scrimmage as a spot corner or even the outside at times. So Avery Patterson, there's always, in all these interviews, I get asked who could be a possible free safety in the later rounds. I think last year there were plenty of more options compared to this year, but I always answer Avery Patterson. I really like his game. Now, like I said, he's not the best tackler in the world, but if you shore that up and if you fix that, which some prospects have done in recent years, I think you get a good player in the fifth or sixth round with Avery Patterson.
Josh Norris from Roto World. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Norris. Thank you very much, Josh, for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks a lot.
Now we're going to delve into the draft buzz, the top headlines there pervading the Twitterverse, the internet, everything about what's going on with the 2014 NFL Draft. And the first name we're going to begin with is a name that comes from, speaking of Tony Pauline once again, Dominique Easley, Florida defensive tackle. He is scheduled to hold a workout very shortly now. Very talented, but injury is the huge question mark regarding Easley. I huge is underrated. Fran, what's your take on Easley having the workout and trying to showcase to NFL teams that he would indeed have a chance to be ready potentially for the 2014 season?
Well, it's a shame. I wish we could get Josh back on the phone because I know he is a huge fan of Dominique Easley. But obviously, like you said, the injuries have been a big issue. Back in 2011, tore his ACL in his left knee. And then this past fall, ruptured his ACL and his meniscus in his other knee and his right knee. So issues in both knees, but just an explosive kid. He's 6'2", 288. He's got long arms, but just an explosive kid with great hand use, high motor, just a really fun player to watch. And I think he's scheme versatile. And I think he's really positionally versatile. So, you know, he could line up as a nose tackle right over the center. He could line up as a three technique. He could line up as a five. He could line up in a two-point stance even. I think he's athletic enough to do that. So it'll be really interesting to see where he goes on draft day.
Without the injuries, where do you think he would go?
I think he's a top 20 pick without the injuries, for sure. But when you have multiple surgeries on both of your knees, it's going to hurt you. So where he ends up going, you know, that's going to be a big question.
How would you compare him to a year ago, Tank Carradine, Florida State linebacker, edge rusher type player, who also was very talented, similar situation, possible top 15, 20 pick, but he too had the injury. How would you compare? Now, Carradine did get drafted by the 49ers. The 49ers kind of used a medical redshirt year, quote-unquote, so to speak. How would you kind of compare and contrast the two scenarios here?
That's a really great comparison, actually. And it's, you know, maybe they're not the same player on the field, but very similar situations. And I could see that kind of situation playing out where, you know, maybe a team that doesn't need him right now could say, okay, this is a great investment. We're going to get a future top 20 pick. It's like trading that pick for a top 20 pick next year if you're going to get that guy a year from now. So really, I could see a team, you know, in the latter part of round one, in the early stages of round two, saying, okay, let's take Dominique Easley. wait for him to rehab that knee, get him fully healthy, and then he'll be back in the fold for 2015.
Next headline, ESPN's Mel Kiper has his next mock draft, his latest edition of the mock draft, and he has the Eagles taking Calvin Pryor. Again, that's sort of the big name out there right now, the most popular pick, so no surprise there. We've delved into the safety position plenty on the show. One safety we talked about, Jimmy Ward from Northern Illinois, number two for Josh Norris there amongst the safeties. There's one mock. Is it Dane Brugler who has it?
Dane Brugler, correct.
Dane Brugler has him at number 21 in the first round going to the Green Bay Packers. Is that a little too high in your estimation, Fran?
Well, I mean, look, this game's all about playing in space, and it's about being, you know, positionally versatile. So you look at a guy like Jimmy Ward, and we talked about him just now with Josh Norris, a guy who you can move all around the secondary, all around the defensive formation, and rely on him to play in coverage one-on-one against receivers and tight ends, come down and play in the box or play in the deep half. So would it surprise me? No, it wouldn't surprise me because – you know, you look at a team like Green Bay, who historically has, you know, had not been afraid to take a guy a little bit earlier than people would expect. I could see Ward fitting in there and really playing early.
Should we note that last year, three safeties went in the first round, Kenny Vaccaro, Eric Reed, and Matt Elam. So it'll be interesting to see if Clinton Dix, Pryor, and Ward end up being the three safeties from this year's draft
class.
And
the difference there, too, is last year's safety class was regarded as the deepest in X amount of years. I mean, it was a very good group. And this year, it's not as highly regarded. So you've got that strength at the top with Dix, with Pryor, and with Ward. It'll be interesting to see how that changes this year. If people say, okay, we got to scoop up Jimmy Ward, because after that, there's a big drop-off.
Our last note here in our draft buzz at Wake Forest Pro Day. In memory of Bo Wolf, thinking of him here on the show, Nikita Whitlock pushed up 43 reps, according to, I've seen different reports. I think Pauline had it around 40, but nonetheless, around 40 reps of 225 pounds into bench press. The nose tackle, he's 5'11", 260 pounds. What do you do with a guy who has all the strength in the world, but just does not have the prototypical size for a defensive line position in the NFL?
That just a bulldog on film. I'm just going to put that out there right now. 5'11", 250, you're not really expecting this guy to be much of anything inside as a nose tackle. He is a guy who I maybe out of any of these defensive linemen in this draft, I do not want to run into this guy in a dark alley. He eats glass for breakfast. I don't want anything to do with this kid. But really, I mean, lined up as a 0-1 technique for Wake Forest, drops his anchor really, really well. Very tough, nasty kid, pushes after the whistle, just constantly is playing with a chip on his shoulder. And really what he reminds me of, there was a guy last year out of Bowling Green, Chris Jones, who went undrafted. He may have actually been a seventh-round pick, but he went to New England, and no one thought, he's a 5'11", 5'10", 200-plus pound nose tackle. This kid's not going to do anything. And he ended up playing for New England and getting some quality snaps. And I could see someone, you know, taking Whitlock in the seventh round and him actually, you know, making some hay, because he's a guy, like I said, who really stood out on film, has a great nose for the ball, decent burst. But again, when you're that size, it's tough to be taken seriously when it concerns your draft stock.
Very, very interesting to see where he'll end up.
I don't know if Bo Wolf was down there counting those bounce reps, so we may have to confirm.
That's
that
why
well.
It's 43.
That's why it's
43.
That's why it's 43. It may have been 27, and he just counted some extras. So we'll ask Bo next week.
Our final segment in this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA, the pick is in. So we went on Twitter to ask you Eagles fans, who do you think will be the best defensive player, not a fit for the Eagles, but just the best defensive player to come out of this year's draft? 5 years from now, who will be the guy that everyone says that defensive player should have been the first one taken in the 2014 NFL draft? And the majority was split between Khalil Mack and Jadeveon Clowney. No surprise there whatsoever. One of the tweets that we got was from at Sean Wolford, who he voted for Mack and said that he's got a chip on his shoulder from playing in a small school from Buffalo, but with a great edge rusher, should be able to excel at the next level. Where do you stand? What are your thoughts on the Khalil Mack, Jadeveon Clowney matchup? Because Clowney has all the hype, but he's also got the freak athleticism. Look, when we saw him at the combine, he went up on the podium and he engulfed the podium. He looked like he could have just picked up the podium and body slammed it WWE style onto the floor. No other prospect, even offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, what have you, had that just commanding presence that Jadeveon Clowney had. His grips, those paws just looked like they would squish the football. And you saw him when he recovered the one fumble where he just picks it up one-handed, snatches it off the ground like nothing. What's your take when you look at someone like him versus someone like Khalil Mack, who's been very productive, and he had that great game against Ohio State, but he comes from the quote-unquote small school and has to overcome that stigma?
I think that, and just keep this in mind, we all got the physical impressions of Jadeveon Clowney when he walked up to that podium. The following day after we saw him, he went out and he ran a 4.53 40-yard dash, unofficial 4.47 with a hand time from Charlie Casserly. 1.56 10-yard split. Those numbers would have put him in the top half of receivers. And he went and he did that, and that was better than any of the edge rushers that came out, you know, for the combine and worked out. So really, when you're talking about a guy who's that big and that explosive and finished in the top five in broad jump and vertical jump, just great lower body explosion, it's impossible to say, and to, you know, I'm going to write this guy off, because really the talent is absolutely there, and people have questioned the work ethic and the habits of, you know, what he brings off the field, and you know, valid questions that really we in the media can't speak to, because we don't talk to the coaches, don't talk to the weight room staff, don't talk to his teammates, his high school staff, and things of that nature. We don't talk to those guys. So it's tough for us to kind of pontificate on that. But if you're going strictly off the film, I'm taking Clowney every day of the week, twice on Sunday. No question.
Very, very interesting there. Another tweet comes from at Fly Eagles Fly with an extra Y at the end. That's a difference. A little off the board goes with a safety, Deion Buchanan of Washington State. Fran, your thoughts?
I got to think that was his wish, not his who he thought was the most likely to stick. But hey,
I put the question out there. I don't know. I can't go into the mind of a Fly Eagles Fly and see exactly what he was trying to get after there.
I mean, Buchanan's a guy who Eagles fans are really starting to warm up to. 6'1", 211, was down at the Senior Bowl. Lined up mostly to the field in Washington State's defense, you know, as a field safety in space. Big kid.
What does that mean,
arms.
A field safety?
So, you know, when you line up at the safety spot at the college level, the hash marks are wider. So when you have your two safeties playing, one's going to play closer to the boundary and, you know, obviously in less space and confined quarters, and one guy's going to play more to the field on the wider side of the field. And more often than not, you're going to play your guy as the field safety who's more apt to play in space and win in space. So that was where Buchanan played. And some see him as a strong safety type at the next level, a Cam Chancellor type of player. And obviously he compared himself to Chancellor at the combine. Obviously, it's
of course you would. They won the Super Bowl. Of course, exactly. That's who you're going to want.
And he's from Washington State. So, of course, I'm sure he's had that comparison thrown around for the last couple of years. But, that's really where his game is as a big physical hitter in the box. I'm not going to say that he's a one-trick pony and that he can't play in space, but that's his strength, is he is a physical guy, plays down near the line of scrimmage. I don't know that he's the best space player, but really is a guy who, if you need a physical guy to come downhill and lay a hit in the alley, Buchanan's your guy.
So if you have any questions for us you want to send to us, you can send it to at Eagles Insider, where myself and Bo Wolf, we operate that Twitter handle. You can send them to Fran at FDuffy3 as well. You could use the hashtag Eagles Draft anytime, day or night. Fran, I think that's going to do it for us here on the second week of the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Is Bo back next week?
Bo is back next week, so we will have the three amigos all together once again next week. So if you have any content suggestions, whatever you want to hear, see on the show, make sure to let us know. So is there a way we could do this more than once a week?
I mean, we could. I mean, maybe when Bo gets back from Wake Forest, we can, we'll see if he's got it in him. I mean, he had to hold the bar for Nikita Whitlock for some of those 43 reps.
A couple
so
times.
He may need some time to recuperate.
Who was the Cardinals strength coach? I think he was actually recently let go, but the one that always worked at the combine. Was he doing those motivational techniques?
He may.
One more, Nikita. Come on.
And, I was going through the combine footage earlier this week, and after every guy finished, he hugs him. So he's a very affectionate guy. Yeah. I wonder if Bo played that role for Whitlock and gave him a big hug after.
Bo is a very affectionate guy.
He is a very affectionate guy,
to say the least. So, but thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. So long, until next time.